Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
This is the Balkan Adventures Podcast, everyday life and experiences in the Western Balkans.
We sat today in a coffee bar in Banja Luka, and you know, being an Englishman in the Balkans, sometimes you feel that you're the only foreigner that is in Banja Luka. Having said that, there are about five others, four of which are Brits, so I'm not totally alone. But today I've caught up with Christoph Baumgartner. Christoph is going to tell us anyway, but I think comes from Bech, which is Vienna. Mm-hmm. He's also a journalist, and he runs this amazing blog called BalkanStories.net. We're going to talk about that as well. So let's do it properly and find out a little bit about why an Austrian has an obsession with the Balkans. So why the Balkans for an Austrian?
I guess I've always had friends from down here. When I was in kindergarten, I had like a playmate that was from what was back then Yugoslavia, in primary school, and later on, you know, when I moved to Vienna, I've always lived in areas that are mainly proletarian, mainly migrant. And to think that one out of every 10 Viennese does have roots in former Yugoslavia, and we're just talking first and second generation. So, you know, at some point in time in my life, I just decided to find out, you know, where all these friends of mine come from and what their background is and why too the horrible things that happened 20 years ago or 25 years ago now could happen, because that was also when I grew up, that that my mother took care of a couple of refugees from Bosnia and Croatia, so that also was something. And it slowly developed into a passion. Let's call it a passion.
You're a journalist, but you blog, and you might say, well, blogging is a natural extension for a journalist, but it seems, as things develop in the digital world, that bloggers are becoming their own sort of genre, their own sort of DNA within the internet, and not conforming to the normal rules of accepted journalism. What would you say you are primarily? Are you still a journalist, or do you see yourself, as time goes on, becoming more of a blogger?
I would say that I'm still mainly a journalist, but I'm trying to cover long abandoned tradition of subjective yet neutral journalism. Like, if you look at journalistic works of Ernest Hemingway, for instance, he did that, or his Austrian Czech counterpart Egon Erwin Kisch, who did that a lot, and those are journalists that have inspired me a lot, and I would actually call them the if you will the grandfathers of journalistic blogging. So really to do stuff at your own time, at your own pace, and at your own length, which is what I love about my blog. I can do what I want. I still try to adhere to journalistic standards, and I think I do a better job than actually a lot of professional journalists do on their paid jobs. But it enables me to give my individual perspective while still trying to be neutral, if you will.
How difficult has it been to set up a blog? I mean, people think it's, you know, pretty easy. You hook onto WordPress and you start churning out content without any discipline, without any real care. How difficult has it been to establish Balkan Stories, to have, like, it's got a considerable readership and a whole breadth of stories?
Well, I thought it was easier than it turned out to be, like many people. Luckily, I've got a lot of routine and writing and then discipline writing also, so that did help a lot. But one of the things that I underestimated was the need for images, for instance. One of the things that I'm still trying to get good at is, let's call it self-marketing, because I think there would be a lot more people interested in reading my stories than are currently reading them.
When you get responses, for me in particular, people are more interested in the darker, the more unpleasant side of the former Yugoslavia, the Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Serbia, the Croatia, the Montenegro of today, rather than the positive things. What's your experience dealing with that?
Actually, I think I do get more response for positive stories, actually. I mean, I do try to cover both ends, but both ends from an angle you wouldn't normally have any place for in standard media, or I would like to avoid the term mainstream media because it sounds a bit hostile now, and it's being abused by a lot of people who want to spin a conspiracy theories. You know, let's say, for instance, I discover a Facebook video with a very, very nice Bosnian joke, and I'm so proud that I understood enough of the language to get the point of that video, of that joke, and I posted that online, and people were like, yeah, great, you did that. Finally, somebody did that. Notwithstanding the fact that of course, I only had a fraction of people watching it on my blog compared to the Facebook page, which I think there the video was watched 500,000 times or even more than that. And that was just a simple thing to do. I mean, it took me 10 minutes maybe, you know, asking the guy who had posted it on his Facebook page if I could use it, and he was like, okay with it, and then, you know, write the text around it. Just a few lines. I mean, that is a video that's self-explaining to everybody who speaks the language. So, you know, waste no time about it. And you know, that was very encouraging to see that, that I made people smile. I love to do that, of course. But also, like, on more negative stories that I do, sometimes I do get response, and that also is encouraging, because I, most of the time, I try to cover those angles that are frequently overlooked by Western media. I try to cover the poverty one encounters here, the open poverty, for instance, and that also does at least occasionally get some response, and I have people tell me, thank you for telling that story, because it needed to be told. People should take a closer look here.
This is the Balkan Adventures podcast.
You get lots of unique stories as well. One in particular that has always stuck in my mind was, I thought, you know, where the heck did Christoph find the story about drinking for peace, about craft beer? It was such an amazing story. You can check it out on the blog. It was wonderful. So where do you get these really offbeat stories from?
That was pure luck. Actually, the guys who initiated the project emailed me if I didn't want to write a story about them. That was really pure luck, and I do get that occasionally too, like authors writing to me, don't you want to do a review of my book, or don't you want to cover that? There's also a story I think I could be doing for you, or should be doing actually for you. Need to have it translated. A friend of mine, Bosnian Austrian, has published an all-comprehensive traveler's guide to
yes,
Bosnia.
Yes. Tell us about it.
So Amel is totally unsatisfied with how Bosnia is represented internationally as a tourism destination. So he decided to write his own book with destinations that he went to, and I think it's like the traveler's guide with the most destinations in it, actually. And you know, he doesn't write a lot about history, perhaps, but just about the beauty of the country and what you do when you're in a certain place. And it has lots of images in it, and it's very comprehensive. And I think it's been published in 5 languages so far. Bosnian, or the language formerly known as Serbo-Croatian, or a language without name, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, we always have that problem.
German, Turkish, English, and I think Italian.
That's amazing. Hey, you come here twice a year, and we were talking before we started this discussion about the problem that we perceive as being a problem for the country, that, you know, everything gravitates to Sarajevo in the first instance, and then in the second instance it gravitates to Mostar. We're sat in a coffee bar in Banja Luka at the moment, which I have rarely seen on any tour itinerary, but yet there's a lot of history here. There's a lot of culture that seems to get lost. I have this impression that there are black holes of information in the Balkans. What's your view on that?
Well, definitely, and saying that, like being as somebody who has come to regard Sarajevo as a second home, actually, you know, it is through friends here that I find out about stuff to do and to visit mainly. And I'm lucky to have these friends. It's, you know, for us in the West, it's mostly cliche, and you've got a couple of traveler's guides with outdated infos. And this doesn't solely concern Bosnia, by the way. And then you're stuck in a place and you're wondering what to do. When you don't have anybody who knows the place around here, you're bored to death. And that is sad, because it is very hard to find good info on what to do when, for instance, you want to travel to Bosnia and try to be off the beaten path, perhaps a bit. Mostar is a beautiful city, but if you've been there once, I think it's enough. You know, unless you get good friends there, you know, you don't want to bump into all those tourists. Sarajevo is great if, you know, like, the corners of the town are usually not in the spotlight. Banja Luka, I don't know enough about, but Banja Luka has me fascinated with this mix of architectures, for instance. You never read about that. Or at least I don't recall ever reading about it. Just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't exist. And so I think it would be a very good thing for Bosnia to understand itself as a country, as a united country, and to promote tourism and to perhaps get some comprehensive traveler's guides published. That would be a good start.
Let's go back to Sarajevo for a second. And, you know, when you go to Sarajevo, they say, oh, you can go in the city center and you'll see a mosque and you'll see an Orthodox church and you'll see a Christian church and you can go and visit them all. And isn't this a wonder? How the heck did you find the synagogue?
Well, that was in a traveler's guide, actually, for once. But you know, you really have to leave through this. And there are two, actually, one of which is a museum, and that one's better described in the traveler's guide. And the other one, I passed by, actually looking for something else, and then I passed it by and I thought, didn't I read something about this building in a traveler's guide? It must be a synagogue. And then I wander into there, expecting heavy security checks, as is customs in Austria, because, well, you know, we do have neo-Nazi anti-Semites, we do have a couple of Islamistic anti-Semites, so, well, there are some serious security issues for the synagogue in Vienna. And nobody asks me for an ID. It's just a friendly young girl working there asking me whether I want a guided tour through the synagogue. Then there was a cafeteria I can go to openly with a couple of people just hanging out, just normally, everybody happy. I'm there, very welcoming. And after the tour, I get invited to Shabbat prayer, which was a great experience, even for me not being a religious person. But the best thing of them all, in the cafeteria there, the cafeteria is, I think, the only place in all of Sarajevo that calls Turkish coffee still Turkish coffee.
It's domestic elsewhere, isn't it?
Right. It's domaća kafa, domestic coffee, which Balkan Kafana in Vienna also sell it as domestic coffee, and there is nothing domestic about it in Vienna, but they still use the term.
You know, what we should do, I think, in the future is, you know, reserve a weekend and the two of us should do, you know, the off-the-track Banja Luka. What do you actually look for, though, when you go to somewhere in the country that you've never been before? Is there a sort of plan that you have? Do you start with architecture, or do you start with religion, or do you start with food? You know, what is your plan?
I'm always trying to go to places to meet people, to talk to people. That is what interests me the most. Sometimes you're not as lucky as you hope you were. And of course, sometimes when you go to specific places, you do have places in mind that you desperately want to see. But mainly for me, it's like, okay, you know, I came to Banja Luka for the first time to see the, I think here it's called Narodni muzej.
Yeah, just over there, the Night of the Museum, yeah.
And the Museum of Republika Srpska to take a look at the reconstruction, or to some degree rewriting of history, because that is a topic that generally interests me. And then it was like, yeah, and I do want to meet some friendly people here too. And well, I did on my first try, and we're still in contact. So
this is the Balkan Adventures podcast.
As far as the Balkans are concerned, that's either, because you do write balkanstories.net, we're going to just ask you a little bit about that in just a sec. But, you know, this is always a difficult question to ask. I think it's an amazingly hard question to answer, but you're going to do it, I know. One place in the Balkans, if you could say to a Northern European, when you go to the Balkans, you must go here, what would Christoph Baumgartner's suggestion be?
I think it would depend on the person. I think.
Well, that's trying to get out of it now.
definitely, no. But there are basically, I think, two places that really... really do it for me, like city-wise. If you want a more exotic experience, it would definitely be Sarajevo. Otherwise, it would be Belgrade. But if you're a nature person, try anything along Neretva. Anything, and you'll love it. It really is a hard choice because, you know, I'm always having the person in mind I'm suggesting this to. I've been suggesting to a couple of people right around successfully, admittedly, who I know would like to take vacations by the sea and are always looking for affordable places to go to. I told them, go to Neum. Admittedly, I've never been, but
oh yeah, that's Bosnia. Bosnia is 23 kilometers of coast, right?
Right. And I always tell them, you know, give that a try. Or otherwise, Montenegro. You know, it's a good bargain, very friendly people, great food, great landscape. What more could you want? Unfortunately, people still have those cliches in their heads about the Balkans and are not that adventurous, so they would rather go to Mallorca instead and then get trapped within thousands of drunk Germans, which is not the most pleasant experience that I can imagine, but... But, you know, I hope that at least one day I'll succeed in convincing somebody to go to Neum, for instance.
Fave Balkan food?
Oh, that's a tough one because that's a long list.
But you only got one. You've only got one.
Okay, Mučkalica.
Mučkalica?
Yeah.
Mučkalica. That's like a goulashy chorba, sort of like mishmash, right?
Right. Prefer from veal, but from pork it's also great, and with fresh kaimak on it, and we don't get that at home. We do have some restaurants that carry Mučkalica, rarely that you find them in Vienna, but no kaimak topping. It's not the same thing.
Fave drink?
Nectar, as you so...
It's domestic.
it's domestic. It's a domestic beer. That is good. It's Sarajevsko Nectar, Nichichko, now that I got it out. So one of these three I probably would...
You recommend?
Šljivovice. Very traditional here, not very original, but
because I love Loza. I just love. Yeah, that's me.
You know, that's great also. But for me, it's Šljivovice ever since my grandfather made Šljivovice in his basement in Austria. You know, just as little amounts that you were allowed and are allowed to make at home back then, and then it was Šljivovice, and then it's been that for me ever since.
Tell us about. Tell me about. Balkanstories.net. You know, this is your however many minutes you need of shameless self-promotion. But no, it's a very good read, and it's got an amazing variety of topics and stories. But you are Balkanstories.net, so nobody finer to ask. So tell.
Like I was saying, I'm trying to cover unusual angles, stuff that nobody writes about. And by now, I've got a network of friends that do help me find stories. And some of them are stories that they're personally involved in, which, you know, doesn't matter. And so sometimes it's just stuff that I run across because I listen to people. Last year, a guide at Kuća Cveće, the Tito Museum in Belgrade, told me, yeah, Tito still gets letters. And I decided to follow up that story this year because it would have been his 125th birthday. So first I write an email to the museum, no reply. That's negative side about the Balkans. Nobody ever replies to emails. And then I call him up from Vienna, and actually another curator tells me, yeah, this is true, you know. And she found it totally amazing that anybody could find it interesting. Or the whole complicated story about the National Library in Sarajevo that's really being mistreated horribly with the city government not letting it into the building that has been reconstructed 3 years ago to be the new old seat of the National Library. To my knowledge, I was the first one to cover that outside of Bosnia, or at least outside of ex-Yugoslavia. And I also initiated a solidarity reading for them, which was not so successful on the Vienna end. Although we had great authors, but it was raining, it was windy, and we were doing it outside. Besides, it was cold, so we never had an audience of more than three, like, combined. But it got the people in Sarajevo enormous coverage, like a whole lot of TV station all of a sudden turned up, because they learned that we had a reading in Vienna, which I still do not understand, but I like it. You know, I like that I made a difference. Like writing about Bad Amel that I mentioned before, Amel Salbašić, who wrote that the comprehensive traveler's guide to Bosnia. So that's, you know, that's the thing I love doing, or you know, writing about the synagogue in Sarajevo. I hope that on my next trip to Belgrade, I write about their synagogue too. And now I've got tons of stories that, you know, I've packed up. Oh my gosh, I got into the building of Tanjug. Okay, it wasn't that difficult. It was a, you know, night of the museum and everything, so it was free entry for everybody. But there I am in a building of the legendary news agency that still exists, and nobody knows why, because they're supposed to have been shut down for 2 years. And I'm trying to follow up on that angle too. But you know, just to have been in there is an amazing thing, and then I'll convey that. They had great photographs, by the way. So, I mean, that is also something I'll do. Or sometimes, you know, just a nice photo story when I run across something like Mostar and Rain, which I published, actually, I think just a week or 10 days ago. You know, in black and white. Because, like, you know, I'm not a photographer per se. Sometimes I'll do lucky shots, and I got a good, trustworthy camera. I don't do most of the work. But, you know, I thought, you know, let's do it black. Let's do that in black and white. Let's do it in rain, because, first of all, black and white looks good in rain. And secondly, nobody ever does Mostar in rain. Let's do it. Let's see what it looks like.
This is the Balkan Adventures podcast.
You know, when you go back through your archives, which you must do every now and again, you know, what blog post that you've posted on the site gives you that real special feeling and generates a massive smile on your face?
I think it's about the sculpture of Travnik. I was visiting the Ivo Andrić Birthplace Museum, and then the curator, whom I had an interview with, tells me, yeah, after the interview, and then 2 hours, and I'm really hungry, and I'm exhausted, and thirsty, and everything. But he tells me, you know, there's somebody I'd like you to meet. Closes up the museum, takes me basically around the corner to a barber shop. And there is this guy, Louis, who doesn't speak any English, who's made this amazing sculpture in front of the museum. And turns out the guy's a refugee from Basra in Iraq. He's lived in Bosnia for almost 20 years. And then I was doing an interview with him in my rudimentary Bosnian. And then we were managing. And he's an artist who runs the barbershop to make a living. Also draws paintings and does a sculpture every couple of years that he donates to the people of Travnik. And the last of which was the Ivo Andrić statue that almost failed because he had a sponsor for the metal back then. I mean, and he pays for, like, everything else. But he had a sponsor to pay for the metal. And the guy, and the night before they were supposed to deliver the metal, the guy calls him up and tells him, no, sorry, I can't pay. So he digs up, like, every cent he's got in the house, literally slaughters his kids, piggy banks, as he told me, and you know, so he could pay the metal. And then does the sculpture, and you know, and now it's in front of the museum. And that's such a great story. That's heartwarming because it tells me what human beings can be like if you let them.
That's certainly heartwarming. Finally, what's the plans for BalkanStories.net?
Perhaps to grow sort of at one point in time, I could at least, you know, make a little money to cover for some parts of my traveling, and to find a readership that I think spreads the word a lot more and perhaps helps a lot of people reconsider their opinions on the Balkans and particularly ex-Yugoslavia. I think that, I mean, like the latter part is what this blog is here for, to try and avoid cliches, which is not entirely possible because we all have them, but at least, you know, whenever I kind of, when I'm out, when I stop and think about it. And luckily, by now, I do have some readers that point out some things to me. And perhaps, you know, at one point in time, it can make a contribution for people to see the Balkans with at least less cliches and perhaps to reconsider development politics by the West and the Balkans. And perhaps they also reconsider how they themselves treat migrants from the Balkans and then the countries that they live in.
To find out more about us and where we live, why not check out our blog at anenglishmaninthebalkans.com. See you next time.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.